Paper 118, section 9, which is old single column, page 1303. Let's see. Preface. I think you can, you'll see right away as we get into it, that they really construct these last three sections in a very spectrum-like fashion. You know, one just rolls over into the next, it rolls over into the next. And, you know, there's all kinds of significant things along the way. But one of the things that they're heading for in the final section, you know, if you flip or if you remember, you know, the functions of providence, that word providence that has played such a significant role in human history, that's one of the goals that they've been steadily threading through this whole journey we've been taking is trying to have the perspective in place to be able to really speak to the truth of that notion, and to try to gently guide people away from all of the magical, you know, silly notions attached to that. So definitely this section is important to have in place to build, you know, in this process of building to the last section. So let's just jump in. You'll see how they're touching on some of the things we read last time, you know, carrying them forward.
Universe mechanisms. Time and space are a conjoined mechanism of the master universe. They are the devices whereby finite creatures are enabled to coexist in the cosmos with the infinite. Finite creatures are effectively insulated from the absolute levels by time and space. But these insulating media, without which no mortal could exist, operate directly to limit the range of finite action. Without them, no creature could act, but by them, the actions of every creature are definitely limited.
Okay. Let me just point out couple things that you know, are just sort of being quickly touched upon, you know, as they step from sentence to sentence there. That first sentence, we brought that out a little bit when we were going through the Total Deity paper. You know, it's not just in the sense of, you know, there's an and between the word time and the word space and the title of the paper. You know, it's more than that in the sense that they're conjoined. I mean, it's literal. If you remember, we talked about what really gives rise to these basic notions that in general we call time and space. They're rooted all the way back in the origins of things, when you're talking about the bifurcation that separation that you create between the unqualified absolute and the deity absolute. You know, literally that separation, you know, the measure of that is space. And then the tension that arises then, you know, when you separate individuality from unity, you know, there's a tension there. And a whole sequence of events come into existence to resolve that tension. You know, it takes eternity to resolve that infinite tension, but you know, you have this space, and then the sequentiality of that sequence of events is time. But it's more than that, because like they're saying, they're conjoined. And we brought that out. If you think about it just logically, you know, if you start in the beginning with the I am, you have a very fundamental unity expression in your initial conception there. And so as you go forward in thinking about creating a sequence of blossoms, you know, unfolding of that I am, you can't lose that unity. You can't, because we're talking about infinity. We're talking about, you know, everything. So that unity can't somehow evaporate. It has to still be there in some way. And with space and time, it's very simple to understand that you have, you know, however far I pull this apart, I create a longer and longer sequence of events to resolve that tension. You know, so they're related to each other in size, okay? And technically, they're reciprocally related. Space divided by time is motion. You know, space and time are conjoined, you know, together as motion, okay? And then, you understand time to be the chronicity of that motion, okay? So that's literally, you know, what's behind that statement. They're reminding you that you have this very fundamental manifestation of motion that in many ways you can think of time and space as being abstractions of that in a reciprocal fashion. And so, you know, if you have an equal measure of space divided by an equal measure of time, that's unity. See, the ratio is unity. The unity is still there. You know, that ratio, you know, it manifests as unit motion. Okay. Now, the other thing there, this whole bit about devices whereby finite creatures, you know, can coexist with the infinite, and, you know, this basically serving as an insulator. Just think about that very simply when we put things around the infinite eternal ellipse. You know, if you're down here in the finite, in order to get up to the absolute, you know, domains, you have the supreme and the ultimate domains in between. They're a buffer between you and the absolute. You know, so literally, you know, and that parallel, supreme and ultimate, time and space, see, you can see, you know, that those, that literally the supreme and the ultimate are serving as a buffer between the finite and the absolute. So, not to belabor all this, I mean, you could talk about a lot of things there, but just, you know, always be looking to see if you can understand when they make statements like that, understand them directly. Don't just say, well, okay, I guess I got to remember that somehow. See if you can, if you can picturize it some way in the various constructs that we've made, the models we've made to understand how the universe is put together.
The way I look at that one sentence, finite creatures are effectively insulated from the absolute levels by time and space, but these insulating media, without which no mortal could exist, operate directly to limit the range of finite action. Without them, no creature could act. Okay, I know.
No, he's not.
So,
far from it.
When you have your mind, the cosmic mind, okay, if we weren't insulated, you would have all this stuff coming out of the outer space levels and all these other creatures, their brains talking and thinking. That's what would happen if we all weren't insulated. Mm-hmm. We would be able to be fluxed with... Mm-hmm. You know, all this stuff in outer space, and they would be the same with us. So I think
the
insulation is
isolating
us from them.
Right. It's as basic as that. You know, if there wasn't space, there couldn't be separation. There couldn't be a separation between your consciousness and my consciousness. You know, it starts at a very lowly level that you can understand, but just at the highest level. If there wasn't something that separated us from the absolute, we would be absorbed into the absolute. We couldn't, you know, that was all, you know, in the beginning was the I am, and, you know, yeah, it's infinite and perfect in all these wonderful ways, but it's singular. You know, there's no other. You know, the whole point is to take that totality and understand how, if you put things in a, you know, if you rearrange that total, you can create a construct where it doesn't all just immediately absorb back into itself. Or if you look at it from a temporal perspective, you know, this tension that you create doesn't get resolved until eternity. And so it's there eternally that you have this full construct.
Well, there's some kind of bonus feature to that, which is the additivity.
Right, yeah, and right. We know that that's, it's not just because you can do it, it's because when you create your relationship, then you have the super additive consequence of that true relationship. And that's, you know, so from our individuality viewpoint, that's how we can understand why you would go to all this trouble to create this incredibly complex structure out of that singular beauty. It's because it's singular, you know. And so it, you know, in that conception, because remember, it's a conceptual beginning. The I am is a concept. That concept, you know, you're calling it total, but obviously it isn't. It's a conceptual beginning point. It isn't a way of expressing, you know, the full infinity, because it has something that even I can recognize it doesn't have. With my lowly viewpoint, it doesn't have any relationship at all. Right. You know, so at the very least, it isn't a model of true infinity. Okay. Okay, and then one other little thing, that last little bit. But by them, the acts of every creature are definitely limited. That line sounds innocent until you start getting into details like we often do, and people go, oh, I don't like being limited like that. I want to be able to travel anywhere in the super universe in 5 minutes. And I think it has something to do with relativity or something like that. I mean, see, this is, you know, yet we have to recognize that grand universe, you know, it's very big from our perspective, but it's by no means infinite. You know, even with our lowly telescopes, we can look out into the outer space level and see beyond, you know, the super universe level. So even you know, in the last 100 and so years, we've been contemplating outside of the grand, you know, the space of the grand universe. But it's as big as something can be and still be manageable as a finite phenomenon. As an absonite phenomenon, you can have a much bigger domain. But when you've got all the beings, you know, including divine counselors and everyone else, even though they're really high beings, they're finite beings, you know, and even with solitary messengers going super fast, you know, 4.5 million times the speed of light or whatever, I mean, there are limits of how big you can make something and have it be administratable and, you know, whatnot. You know, just manageable, functional, you know, every word you can think of like that. You know, you can be guaranteed that the size is maximated. It's as big as it possibly could be and still be able to be brought together into a whole eventually. And, you know, because it's as big as it possibly could be and still be brought together as a whole, even if it takes countless trillions of years, that means it's really, really huge compared to beings that are functioning in a very localized way, like even seraphim, say, you know, transport seraphim or something like that. I mean, they can only go roughly 3 times the speed of light. So it takes forever, you know, to go from here to Uversa. Okay, it takes a very long time to, you know, to go across vast, you know, chunks of this whole grand universe. You know, they're not just limited; they're definitely limited. So everyone starts out in a very localized fashion, pretty ignorant of the whole big picture. You know, you and I living on a world with a rebellion and the fault and all this isolation that we suffered because of it. Should be able to understand this, you know, really easily, you know, and be able to deal with it. That what a lot of other beings probably are going to have a harder time with dealing with just how isolated, you know, you really are. You know, they make up for that with the reflectivity service and universe broadcast circuits and those sorts of things, you know, to a degree, but still. You know, you don't race around the galaxy like you were in a science fiction movie. You know, it just doesn't happen. You know, there's no warp drive. So that you can transcend the definite limitations of the finite.
Because we always will have to have some kind of a transport seraphim to take us from one place to another.
Well, and when we're finaliters, we can get around by ourselves.
We can?
Mm-hmm.
The constraints come off.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, basically, when you really get into a mode where you're moving very vertically, sort of in relative to the cosmos as a whole, they point out that everything that you've achieved, sort of in that journey upward, you can navigate on your own. You know, and finally, when you've made it all the way into paradise, you know, so you've spanned that whole vertical extent of the cosmos, then you can navigate the whole cosmos on your own. Maybe another way to think about it is, you truly have a relationship to the whole. At that point, remember, you know we've talked about that a journey through Havona. You're acquiring that relationship to God the Mother, that relationship to the individuality of the whole, and you literally can manifest that fact that you can navigate the whole. You can go to other super universes, and you're probably moving at very high rate, somewhere up there in the solitary messenger like rate or whatever,
But we're much lighter then.
Yeah. You know, I mean, you obviously are going to be not too bound when you can be in direct connection with a gravity messenger has no relationship to finite space and time. So, you're pretty transcendent.
That's pretty good.
You know, at least of that measure of space and time, the grand universe measure,
so
at that
really
point.
Commensurate with your status.
Right. Yeah. Divine counselors, for those Trinity personalities can move at pretty high speeds because, the Trinity, the whole, so, even building that up, that understanding, that's why they can move at so much faster rates than others. So, but anyway, just wanted to mention that because, that's a very difficult thing for idealism to deal with. You start reading the details of the story and the administration, and you're going, well, boy, I don't know. It seems like there must be something that bridges that. It's like, no, they have to deal with those huge distances, and it's difficult for them. They don't have some magic thing to get over, those sorts of things, right? Stargates and whatnot. Okay.
Mechanisms produced by higher minds function to liberate their creative sources, but to some degree unvaryingly limit the action of all subordinate intelligences. To the creatures of the universes, this limitation becomes apparent as the mechanism of the universes. Man does not have unfettered free will. There are limits to his range of choice. But within the radius of this choice, his will is relatively sovereign.
Okay, so you can see they're hearkening back to that first sentence of the previous section. In the time-space creations, free will is hedged about with restraints, with limitations. See, so basically they took that first sentence of the previous section and they're expanding on it a little bit here. Just trying to re-stress that so that you have that firmly in mind before they add to that.
Chris,
yep.
It's also the last sentence of that last section, too. That's to do with will.
Yeah, well, there's that, right. But again, it's, when you say it is my will that your will be done, there's a possible misunderstanding there. You're thinking, well, it's my will that your will be done. And so in other words, by this consecration, infinite free will is now going to manifest through me. Mm. No. it is my will that the tiny little finite measure of your will that will fit into my itty-bitty thimble will be done. Now I'm gonna expand my capacity. I'm gonna increase my relationship to God the Mother, and my capacity is going to expand over a long span of time, and more of your will can flow through me. But, you know, full well that nothing transfinite is going to be manifesting through you except for one little thing, you know, choosing eternity now. But other than that, you're very finite limited. And so what God can do through you is very finite limited. He can't make square circles.
Well, and to bring this down to kind of our everyday living, we don't give our children unlimited freedom. We realize that they need limits and as they evolve, and you don't let a five-year-old drive your car.
We make lots of movies about what it would be like if humans weren't hedged all about by these limitations. You know, we imagine, what if you had this superpower being, you know, and just by his sheer force of will, he could, you know, blast fire and, you know, and force fields and whatnot. You know, we love those movies, imagining what it would be like if we had at least less fettered free will. But think about those movies. You know, is it light and life in those movies? No, those movies, it's death and destruction and mayhem on a vast global or galactic scale. Yeah, that's why we're hedged about. and you're not, you know, we've talked about that. You know, is they don't let you higher up, you know, through the ascension until... you know, you have a reign on your free will that's commensurate with the peace of that higher domain. You know, how much reign on your free will do you need before they'll let you into Havona? Do you remember? We mentioned that. What have you achieved before you enter Havona?
Perfection.
Yeah, perfection of...
Oh,
yeah, right. You have perfect consecration of your will to the perfect will of God the Father before they will let you in to Havona. Okay? You have to be completely done with that consecration to the Father step before they'll even let you in.
And then you see all the perfect beings.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and you also don't destroy the perfect place. Okay. All right. Yeah. So, you know, it goes both ways.
And they err on the side of, you know, you couldn't have a Lucifer rebellion if they didn't err on the side of testing and retesting and still.
Right. You know, down in the local system level, you know, there aren't, you know, but you're, like I've said many times, this is the first, you know, real gate, you know, in this process, is they're not going to let you off of Gerasim until you've got some of the basics, you know, under your belt. You're not going to a dungeon until, you know, some, you know, you're grounded pretty solidly.
The life mechanism of the mortal personality, the human body, is the product of supermortal creative design. Therefore, it can never be perfectly controlled by man himself. Only when ascending man, in liaison with the fused adjuster, self creates the mechanism for personality expression, will he achieve perfected control thereof.
So that's a neat little augmentation of the in this life perforce you must serve two masters, you know, recognition. You know, they're sort of adding to that. It's, you know, there's a little bit more, you know, up until you fuse, you're having to deal with the fact that the identification point for your purposing, for your personality, you know, is something that has been handed to you. You know, this body, I didn't design it based upon my free will choice. You know, it just was given to me through this whole complex process of evolution and whatnot. You know, and I have to take up the challenge of identifying with this, and there's just limits to how much I can control this point of identification. But once you're fused so that you've fully synchronized with that Father fragment, okay, then you can, you know, the two of you together as one, you can actually use that phrase, you know, of self-creates.
Yeah.
Okay? You know? that's a notch up, see? You know, from, you remember all those self-hyphen words we went through, you know, just recently. You know, that wasn't one of them. Self-creating was not one of them, okay? But once you're fused with the adjuster, you know, to, in this very, again, very limited sense, the two of you together as one are fully in control of your soul. You know, you're self-creating that identification point for that personality. And of course, now the word soul is beginning to kind of lose its direct meaning. I mean, what you're talking about there is, you know, is literally your Marantia self that is fused with that adjuster. You know, that Marantia self is the identification point for that, that purposing, for that personality.
Is that what they're referring to by the mechanism?
Yes, the mechanism. You know, because, you know, you go from a corporeal mechanism to a Marantia form mechanism until, you know, eventually your first stage spirit, you literally have a spirit form mechanism. But it's always a point of identification.
You don't self-create the Marantia form.
That's what I was saying. You see, it's only, you notice they don't say right now, you have an adjuster right now, but they don't use that word self-creates right now. It's only when you fuse with the adjuster, it's because now the adjuster and you are fully synced that, you know, right now the adjuster creates your soul. But when you're fused together, you know, you can say that you do it because, you know, the two of you have become one, at least to the degree that you can continue to create your Marantia nature.
That's somewhere in the chain of 500 body changes.
Well, yeah, I mean, it, you know, and a lot of times it, you know, it happens before you get to Gerasim, like in the fifth mansion world. But yeah, somewhere before you get too far down the road, usually you fuse, and so you can really say that, you know, you aren't having to deal with someone else's mechanism anymore. You know, you and your adjuster are fully, you know, in charge of this mechanism now. And, you know, if there's an issue with identification, with proper identification, you have no one to blame except you. You know, right now, you just, you know, I have to work with what I've got. You know, and, you know, it may be very difficult. In this short life, you may have a very hard time getting much identification in place. You know, the personality potential is infinite, but how much of it can you actually get identified to this thing that you don't really have much control over? It's going to be limited.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that reminds me, when you said that about your body and stuff, it reminded me of, like, we talked about it a long time ago, but think about when people look at you, you know, they see a certain thing that they think that you are because of the way you look.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, the Elephant Man, when people looked at him, they couldn't see, except a few people could, but they couldn't see the inner beauty of who he was. So, but he had to look at the reflection of himself into other people's eyes. And that must have been, you know, really horrible for him. And it's really nice that the thought of it when he doesn't have that body anymore. So.
Yeah, I know what you're thinking of. You know, we've mentioned this many times. I mean, like I was saying, if there's a problem with that identification, that's not going to be something that will be invisible. I mean, that ill-formed self will be completely visible to everyone. You know, that's why, you know, the more and more Lucifer's personality couldn't, you know, achieve identification, the darker he looked, you know. The point of, you know, of identification for that personality is going dark, and everyone can see it. You know, there's no, you know, flesh and blood mask around his self. You know, his self is exposed to view. And so, see, the two go hand in hand. You know, if you're having problems, everyone's going to know you're having problems, and they're having problems with you too because you're kind of ugly to look at. You know, your true self is visible.
Correction. Yeah. Earlier you said down the road. I think you meant up the road.
That's true.
I mean, you aren't talking about linear progression. You're talking about
if you're getting brighter, it's up the road. If you're getting darker, it's down the road.
Just couldn't resist that.
Okay.
The grand universe is...
Oh, wait, just one, that last little control thereof, I just wanted to point out, because this ties, you know, they did control and over-control in the previous section. See, they're noticing, they're adding this little transition in. Initially, you have nothing but an over-control, mother-like mode, but you get fused with that father fragment, and you can start to use the word control, see, more directly. Now you and your ingester are... you know, in control more, okay, rather than, you know, having to just deal with, you know, some, you know, someone who is behind the mechanism, okay?
The grand universe is mechanism as well as organism, mechanical and living, a living mechanism activated by a supreme mind, coordinating with a supreme spirit, and finding expression on maximum levels of power, and personality unification as the supreme being. But to deny the mechanism of the finite creation is to deny fact and to disregard reality.
Okay, so this is the key transitional paragraph. Combining something we've talked about a lot when we're talking about deity, when we're talking about the Almighty Supreme, the Universal Mother, the Supreme Mind, and the Supreme Being, and we're, you know, we're thinking about that whole deity picture. And they're saying, okay, take that basic, you know, pattern that you were, you know, you were thinking about when you're talking about the deity. Now drop it to the reality. Think about, and you notice it doesn't say the supreme mind and the supreme spirit. It says a. They purposely did that as a transitional form. They left them capitalized. But see, what they're saying is, okay, you know that supreme mind, you know, the supreme mind, sort of a another name for the supreme being, if you're really focusing on, you know, the mind of the supreme being, another proper name. You know, well, think of the mind of the supreme mind. In other words, a supreme mind. Just the mindedness, if you will. You know, and... you know, instead of talking about the person, the Universal Mother, you know, just, you know, the spirit of the Universal Mother, you know. So that you have a supreme mind and a supreme spirit combined with this whole supreme domain of matter. See, they're moving away from deity and matter, mind, and spirit of the whole. You know, there's the whole of the matter and the whole of the mind and the whole of the spirit. Okay, and then of course, you know, the supreme being, you know, finding expression on maximum levels of power, personality, unification as the supreme being. So instead of focusing on the deity coming together, you know, they're transitioning over to thinking about just the things, if you will, coming together, the thingness coming together, the material, mindal, and spiritual things coming together. And the reason they're doing that is because they want you to get to that last sentence. But to deny the mechanism of the finite creation is to deny fact and to disregard reality. Your spiritual consciousness has an initial tendency to just want to think about the God domain of things, or the deity domain of things, if you'll let the revelation, you know, sort of take you to that next notch of bringing in the distinction between God and deity. But you're missing part of the picture. It's like thinking about the absolute, but only thinking about the eternal sun and ignoring the Isle of Paradise. Well, you're missing half of reality, and you're going to understand nothing. you'll think you'll understand things, but you know it'll all be distortion because you're missing half of the picture. You have one eye closed. There's going to be no depth perception. There's going to be no cosmic consciousness. There's only going to be spiritual consciousness. So, you know, when you think about, you know, like we often did, you have the supreme being as an absonite fact. You downstep that down into the finite as the Almighty Supreme and the Universal Mother. And you kind of think of, the, you know, the purposing is coming through the Universal Mother and is being imposed upon the Almighty Supreme. That Almighty Supreme is attached to things. You know, the sevenfold controllers come down here, you know, to engage things. So just take that next step. You know, if you imagine this getting to the Almighty Supreme, that gets then to the things. Okay? They're bringing in the things through the Almighty. And that's a key as we go through the rest of the paper, to bring in that other part of the picture. You know, because initially when we're talking about total deity, like when we talk about the seven functional levels of total deity, the Isle of Paradise, you know, is not in that picture. See, we're bringing in the things. You know, or if you were on the absolute level, you'd be bringing in the Isle of Paradise. Because after all, in the sevenfold controllers, there's the Isle of Paradise. You know, that's one of the sevenfold controllers. Okay, so in the same way, that's they're bringing that into play. You know, so just, you know, the grand universe is mechanism as well as organism, a mechanical and living, a living mechanism. You know, from a deity viewpoint, you go, oh yeah, that's right, the Almighty Supreme. I can think of that as really the growing body of the future Supreme Being. Oh, so that's what they're talking about, is, you know, is that organism. Yes, but don't forget how the things are directly tied to that Almighty Supreme too. And so that there's more to the picture than just that facet of deity on that power pattern side. You've got the actual things too that it has a grip on, and an ever-growing grip on. Okay, as it grows, as the Almighty Supreme grows.
In a sense, do you think it's accurate to think about people evolving mindily and spiritually, say, toward light and life? But doesn't our planet, you know, as a mm-hmm. mechanism, mm-hmm. also have to evolve?
Yep, there's that. You can think about this whole picture then when you talk about a planet. Or just like they mentioned, just how does it apply to you? More and more, you know, you'll have, this personality will have a grip that will transcend all the way down, you know, to a firm control of the thing, the identification point for that personality. You know, that's why they brought that into the picture. In the same way, you can think of, you know, if you're doing the top-down view and you start with the full Supreme Being and then you bring him down into the finite and he becomes a she and an it, you know, that it side, that power pattern side, you know, is progressively getting a grip on the things, just like you'll progressively get a grip on your thingness. You know, and the more that happens, the more matter, mind, and spirit are, you know, very integrated, so that you really can't grip without one without gripping the other. More and more power and pattern are becoming, you know, sort of manifest simultaneously. You know, less and less can you say, well, there's energy pattern over here, and there's spirit pattern over here, and there's this big gap between them. More and more, those two are coming together in you and in the evolving Supreme, the power personality synthesis, you know, that will be the Supreme Being. Yeah, okay, just wait.
Thanks, Chris. Mm-hmm. A lot of times I've noticed when somebody brings up the Supreme or the evolving Supreme,
mm-hmm.
Well, the Almighty especially is they'll assume that that's where all the sinners will be absorbed into. And yeah. I don't know why. Is that all I should think about the Almighty? Is that, well, that's all the Almighty is?
No. The Almighty, the acts are ours, the consequences are God's. You know, that expression, the literalness behind that expression is your acts are reflected in the whole. They're not taken from you. You still have the consequences of your acts. You become part of your growing self. But there's a reflection of that in the whole. That growing summation of these reflections of the individuals into the whole, that summation is the Almighty. So the negative component comes in. If you just decide to stop being a generator of value, you know, if you turn your value generator off, well, you cease to exist as an ongoing self. But see, all of the reflections of any value that you had up to that point, when you turned yourself off, you know, as a reality, you know, those reflections are still there. They're still reflected in the Almighty. See, so in a sense, everything that you were that was of any value is just in the Almighty now. That's in the sense and it's very interesting to think about, see, how carefully they chose these words. You know, we all know that there's a long-standing name for God amongst people, you know, calling God the Almighty. See, they're trying to say, well, let's tease out the truth and the real picture. That's a good word. You know, you need to apply it very precisely. It's not another name for the Universal Father or anything like this. But there's this part of God the Supreme, which is very appropriately called that, and it does have a relationship to this whole notion of iniquity that you guys have played with, you know, and how you all have had this notion that, you know, the sinners are going to feel the wrath of the Almighty. You know, humans have been saying things like that. It's like, well, not in that simple-minded way, but there's a measure of truth in that association that humans have so long had. That's why they chose to use the name Almighty for the part of deity that they did. Because it is so, it's the part of deity that is the closest to that notion that humans have had that they called the Almighty. You know, when they called God the Almighty, you know, they weren't thinking lovey thoughts when they used that appellation. You know, we all know when people invoke the name, you know, Almighty, you know, there's usually a finger wagging and, you know, it's in that mode. It's evolution. They're trying to use our ideas in the best they can, but tease them out of the error and apply them very precisely and truthfully. All right. Let's see, where were we here?
Starting paragraph. Mechanisms are the products of mind, creative mind acting on and in cosmic potentials. Mechanisms are the fixed crystallizations of creator thought, and they ever function true to the volitional concept that gave them origin. But the purposiveness of any mechanism is in its origin, not in its function.
Yeah, and you notice how there's these tiny little paragraphs. You know, they're taking one little point of confusion that humans have had at a time and addressing it. And it's in the punchline here, so usually. The purposiveness of any mechanism is in its origin, not in its function. Okay, you've got all kinds of people who say, I've taken an electron microscope to that table, I've examined, you know, down to the deepest level. It's nothing but a mechanism, okay? There's no God in the universe, you know? Or, you know, they've, you know, burrowed down, you know, into the human body and examined all the chemical, you know, reactions and blah, 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 you know, and say, you know, this is just a mechanism. I understand this is electromagnetic force here. This is this, this is that. There's no God, okay? They're making this mistake, you know? Just because God makes a mechanism and like they're saying, the purposiveness, is not in the function. You know, you'll watch it functioning, okay? And you don't see, you know, some sort of a manipulator, you know, obvious personal manipulator happening, you see a mechanism. You don't see random knob turning, you see gravity and electromagnetism or whatever. You're missing the point, you know. Where did the mechanism come from? And why is it a mechanism instead of just a random blob of, you know, nothing? You know, this is the thing about the human body. You know, you can believe neo-Darwinism sort of, you know, or even, you know, regular old-time Darwinism back before you knew what a cell was. When you thought a cell was just some sort of a little organic husk with some goo in it, okay, you know, you could imagine, well, that could have just somehow happened, you know. But you actually zoom in with the electron microscope, and what do you see? You see a mechanism. A mechanism that's so complicated you can't even begin to wrap your mind around it. You know, it's the most complex factory in that tiny little cell, every single cell, and it's the most complex factory you ever imagined and beyond your imagination. That's what it actually is. It's this mind-boggling, obviously designed and functioning, self-perpetuating mechanism. Okay?
You can't inventory.
That doesn't come into existence without purpose. It obviously has purposiveness. What does it say? In its origin. You know? You know, in current magic evolution, you ignore the origin step so you can continue to ignore purposiveness.
The book said something that a scientist looking at science only can only find God as the first source.
Mm.
You can never find God the person. And that personhood is the purposiveness you're talking about, right?
Right. I mean, you know,
so there has to be something else functioning other than just the scientific mind to be able to see God as a person. Otherwise, we're just going to see him as the ultimate mechanism, the source of mechanism.
Right. But again, see, they're trying to get this. Stop and think about the word you're using there, people. Okay? Mechanisms have creators by definition. You can't use that word unless there's a creator. Okay? Persons make mechanisms. Okay?
Not tornadoes.
Not tornadoes. Okay? Tornadoes don't go through junkyards and leave washing machines behind. Okay? Only a person can go through a junkyard. You know?
Just ask the people in this.
Do that. Okay? You know, as soon as you recognize that there are mechanisms in the cosmos and not just random globs of dirt and, you know, and gas and stuff, you know the universe is mind-made and personality-managed. Okay? Because mechanisms don't form by themselves.
If they did, the microscope would
detect. This is the irony of someone saying that, you know, they're a mechanist. They believe in mechanism, you know. There's no need for God, you know. There's just a mechanism. Well, I mean, the word means there's a God.
Yeah,
I mean, that's how stupid that thought is.
It's like evolution.
You know?
Reductio ad absurdum.
You know? Okay, so, you see, they're very, you know, that's the, you're starting to see the point. They're trying to get you to think logically about this. You know, it's not just a universe. It's universe mechanisms. You know, you've discovered that there's mechanisms. You know, you can't not believe that there's something else besides you, because you know no human made these mechanisms that you're finding. Like, someone else did. Who did?
Who did that?
Did you ever think that the spirit of knowledge, the adjutant of knowledge, was maybe the connecting or trying to connect with mechanism? You know, that ultimately comes from paradise and is, you know, stepped down to us through the, you know, universe mother spirit, I guess.
Right. I mean, again,
that sense of mechanism, that sense of technology.
The fact that there are ideas proves that there's more than just matter. I mean, where would ideas come from? An idea like mechanism. You know, either in the literal sense or the conceptual sense. Mechanism.
It's super mechanic.
Yeah. So, you know, you can see there's a bunch of things, you know, happening at the same time here. But definitely the main point is they're trying to, you know, to get you to recognize that, you know, most directly, you know, the mechanism, you know, take it to the whole. You have a cosmic mechanism, and that's because, you know, there's the Almighty Supreme that has a grip on that, you know, and the Universal Mother is the purposiveness, you know, gripping that, and, you know. So they're trying to get the full picture, see, laid out.
These mechanisms should not be thought of as limiting the action of deity. Rather, is it true that in these very mechanics, deity has achieved one phase of eternal expression? The basic universe mechanisms have come into existence in response to the absolute will of the first source and center. And they will, therefore, eternally function in perfect harmony with the plan of the infinite. They are, indeed, the non-volitional patterns of that very plan.
And we don't want to go off on it, but just notice how ever since they gave us that paragraph that we carefully went through with this, all the different self hyphen things, you know, laying on, you know, and we really finally understood in that context where the infinite fits into this picture and you know, the direct relationship between you and the infinite, along with all the other facets of deity. You notice ever since then they've been using that. See, once they gave you what you needed to put it together and really understand how that's key to this whole bit about life animation, where life animation comes from. Where's the reservoir for this mysterious pre-thing manifestation? You know, that you have these two pre-thing reservoirs, the infinite one and the infinite. And that's why you have two, you know, non-thing-like mechanism, or manifestations, I mean, personality and life animation. The other, matter, mind, and spirit, is thing-like, you know. Because those reservoirs, you know, conceptually come into existence after the pre-thing reservoirs. Okay. So you know they word it that way so that for those readers who have taken this long journey and finally put that all together, these paragraphs are deeper. For you, if you haven't made that journey yet, you know, you're, okay, they're just, you know, God, you know, you'll just replace the word the infinite by God, and you'll keep reading and you'll kind of get it, and you know, but they're very, you know that they construct it very precisely, so it has as much depth as you can discern. And you know that it has even more depth that you can't discern yet. And that encourages you to follow the truth further so that you can plumb the depths deeper the next time you get to that, you know, a particular paragraph.
Higher and higher patterns.
Right, yeah.
Higher and tighter patterns.
Right, you know, to see it all in much more complete fashion.
Chris?
Yeah?
I looked up the word intent, and I found one of its definitions is purpose.
Right.
Purpose also intent? Isn't that part of it?
Remember we when we talked about that, the purpose, the reservoir that's called the infinite potential, self-purposive deity, okay? When we did total deity, we called that facet, I am that which intends. Right? See, you know, we were playing off of that. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, that in, you know, they're talking about the same thing, purposiveness and intent.
Well, also the extent.
The extent is in contrast. There's the intent and there's the extent. There's I am that which intends, the infinite potential. I am that which extends, the infinite capacity. Yeah. And notice how there's a time and a space-like difference there, too.
Lawyers, you know, back when I grew up, which is getting to be forever, but they always, you know,
that's time.
Perry Mason and all those, you know, they'd always look for intent. What was the intent behind that individual when they committed that? What was the intent? I don't know if they look so much for that anymore.
And see, only persons can have intent.
Yeah.
You know, mechanisms, you know, in and of themselves don't. You know, they have it built in, perhaps. But, you know, in terms of that in-the-moment intent that they were trying to ascertain, you know, you're talking about a person there. You don't ask, well, what was the intent of that, you know, of that carnivore when it ate that gazelle? There's not intent, okay? There's just instinct. It's not intent. Okay.
We understand something of how the mechanism of paradise is correlated with the personality of the eternal Son. This is the function of the conjoint actor. And we have theories regarding the operations of the universal absolute with respect to the theoretical mechanisms of the unqualified and the potential person of the deity absolute. But in the evolving deities of supreme and ultimate, we observe that certain impersonal phases are being actually united with their volitional counterparts. And thus there is evolving a new relationship between pattern and person.
Okay. Just went back up there when they're talking about the Isle of Paradise and the Eternal Sun. This is a function of the conjoint actor, the absolute mind of the conjoint actor, to be precise. So you see what they're doing there. They're pointing out you have this very definitive separation. But it isn't so simplistic when you start talking about the supreme and the ultimate. Yes, you have, you know, the literal things of the grand universe, and when the grand universe is settled in light and life, you can imagine that the grand universe is going to have some sort of a perfect thing character, like the Isle of Paradise is a perfect thing. But you know, the literal thing of the grand universe is intimately connected to the Almighty Supreme. You don't have this thing where all this the personal is on the one side, the Eternal Son, and all the, you know, pattern is on the other side, the Isle of Paradise. The person also has some pattern in it as well. And then there's the thing, okay? You know, the Almighty Supreme, the pattern, you know, remember we talked about that's the Almighty, let's not say the Almighty Supreme, let's just say the Almighty. The Almighty is the power pattern facet of deity, and the Mother is the personal purposive facet of deity, and those two are coming together. So it's not as simple linear. You're getting more and more the matter and the spirit, the power the power and the personality blended together. It's more absonite, and we've mentioned that, you know, that when you go to the other 18 triodities, you don't have this nice separation into matter, mind, and spirit. You get these blendings, see? And that's what they're pointing out. In the Supreme, you see that foreshadowing of someone who could function as the Supreme Being in that absonite age because he has within him a blending of the two sides. Okay? So that's what they're getting at there. But don't forget that kind of what we're building with is, you know, we're really recognizing that because you have the Almighty Supreme intimately connected to the purposive Universal Mother, and the Almighty Supreme very connected to the matter, the focalizer, the Universal Mother, that coordinate actor, that coordinate action gets translated into the Almighty Supreme and into the things, you know. So that, you know, thinking of that focalizer, that coordinate actor, that functioning getting transmitted down to the things. That's what's leading up to the providence. See? Okay? All right. Now, this is a neat little aside paragraph. They take this little diversion off to the side.
In the eternity of the past, the Father and the Son found union in the unity of the expression of the infinite spirit. If, in the eternity of the future, the Creator Sons and the creative spirits of the local universes of time and space should attain creative union in the realms of outer space, what would their unity create as the combined expression of their divine natures? It may well be that we are to witness a heretofore unrevealed manifestation of ultimate deity, a new type of super administrator. Such beings would embrace unique prerogatives of personality, being the union of personal creator, impersonal creative spirit, mortal creature experience, and progressive personalization of the divine minister. Such beings would be ultimate in that they would embrace personal and impersonal reality, while they would combine the experiences of creator and creature. Whatever the attributes of such third persons of these postulated functioning trinities of the creations of outer space, they will sustain something of the same relation to their creator fathers and their creative mothers that the infinite spirit does to the universal father and the eternal son.
Okay, so you see why they took the diversion? It's just taking off on what we were just thinking about. You know, you think going to ultimate levels of personality expression. You know, in other words, going into the absonite age, and you're going to have all kinds of blending happening that you don't have right now, and this is going to give rise to, like I say, hitherto never manifested phenomena. Yeah, and they're just saying, well, let's take a simple example of that. Let's take Creator Sons, and now finally, when the grand universe is settled in light and life, that creative mother spirit is liberated from being placed in the finite. The two can go hand in hand and begin to function together in the absonite age. And you're going to have some interesting consequences of that relationship where the two blend together. Of all the things that you could talk about, notice what they bring up, just because it's working with some of the things that we've already talked about. Being the union of personal creator, impersonal creative spirit, mortal creature experience, and progressive personalization of the divine minister. And remember, when we talk about creator sons and creative mother spirits, those are both God, those are both personalized deity. So you can ask the question, well, what kind of deity is personalized? A creator son is father-son type deity, personalized. Okay. The father type and the son type, downstep measure of that type of deity, together is one. Okay. Father-son, and then spirit-mother type deity, personalized, as a creative mother spirit. So because in each of those you have, a twofold deity character, in that together as one blend, there's two things you can say. Union of personal creator, if you look at the sevenfold creators, who's at the top? The universal father. Okay, that's, in its roots, father-like. Whereas the mortal creature experience, incarnations of sons. See, so those are, one is the father and one's the son. See, the two things they're mentioning there, and then you have the impersonal creative spirit. You have that impersonal infinite spirit, that impersonal side of the third source and center, being downstepped as just a creative spirit. That's the spirit aspect of the deity. But then you have the mother type deity blended in, the progressive personalization of the divine minister. Okay, so that's all they're doing is just teasing those two apart, and they're saying, you know, think about that. It's not like you have just two things coming together in this relationship of these, you know, imagined progeny. You have these two twos coming together, giving a really complex relationship and consequence. That's what they're pointing out.
And it seems like when they mention in progressive personalization of the divine minister, mm-hmm. that's taking place now.
Right. Yeah, you know.
So this thing is taking place and coordinated in the Absonite realms and is taking place. More
yeah.
or less.
I mean, remember that mother type deity, it's, you know, she's functioning as mother relative to us, you know, focalizer.
Right.
But she's self-focalizing as well, you know. And it's literal. You remember, you know, every time she takes a step of greater focalization, the more that mother-like deity, you know, is fully manifested, she's literally condensing, becoming thicker on Salvington, until eventually when the Supreme grabs a hold of the grand universe, she can fully condense down, focalized, see? That's that mother part. Okay, the spirit part is just, you know, flat, you know, and uniformly spread throughout Nevadon. It defines the initial boundaries of Nevadon. You know, this focalizing facet of deity comes in and it's grabbing a hold of it and bringing itself and it together into a focus. So you can start to, you know, now that we have, you know, that was the whole point of doing this little, you know, laying out the basic attributes of the Universal Father and the Universal Mother. So you have those words that touch back on, oh yeah, initiator, focalizer, you know, use those words in your mind to understand what's going on. Most of what, you know, that is talked about can be understood by just reminding yourselves of those basic attributes. It's like, oh, of course it does that, because that's what Mother Deity does. Mother Deity is focalizer. So, of course, it's going to be slowly vocalizing. What else could it do? You know, or Father deities, initiator. So, of course, everything the Father touches, you know, is an initiation. Now, he's not completing, he's initiating. That's what the Father does. And if you can just, you know, reflect on those basic attribute terms, you know, you'll quickly, you know, be able to sort this out and be able to really think in this sort of bigger deity space, you know, rather than having all this stuff just magically all balled together into one and it just all just magically happens. Let's see. And then, you have to, you know, let yourself flesh out the sentences. When they say, we'll sustain something of the same relation to their creator fathers and creative mothers that the infinite spirit does to the universal father and the eternal mother son. Yeah. In that context, it's a father-mother parallel. In that context, you're not so much thinking, you know, just as the eternal son, but as the eternal mother son. You're bringing in that fullness of that second person, not just the existential deity that's there as the eternal son, but it's experiential existential deity. You know, once you had Havona, it became experiential existential, the two together as one, the eternal mother son. They love to do this in the construction of the book. They aren't pedantic about this. They're not going to just spoon feed every little word to you. I mean, and make the sentences laborious and, you know, and technical. They're counting on you being a person and being able to think, you know, in this, you know, to have the liberty of mind to see the fullness behind the words. You know, you're not making up something, obviously, you know, by saying eternal mother's son there. That's obviously what they're talking about. They practically led you to the only thing they didn't do is force you to drink. know, they led you right to the water on that one. You know, see the sentence in its full form now that you can, and now that you understand the differential in using those two terms. If you want to be really technical and just focus on the existential aspect of the second source and center, then you just say the eternal Son. But if there's any experiential component coming in, you know, don't be afraid to call the second source and center the eternal Mother Son. All right.
God the Supreme is the personalization of all universe experience, the focalization of all finite evolution, the maximation. Ever heard that word before?
Yeah.
The maximation of all creature reality, the consummation of cosmic wisdom, the embodiment of the harmonious beauties of the galaxies of time, the truth of cosmic mind meanings, and the goodness of supreme spirit values. Hey, that's all one sentence.
Mm-hmm.
And God the Supreme will, in the eternal future, synthesize these manifold finite diversities into one experientially meaningful whole, even as they are now existentially united on absolute levels in the Paradise Trinity.
Okay. Now, notice there was a big gap before this last little paragraph. This is kind of a little footnote. Like I said, the main thing, we're bringing in a lot of discussion of the things. But they said, well, now that you are thinking a little bit more about the things, let's restate the deity picture, okay, in these terms. Okay, so let's go. God the Supreme, we know that's the big overarching term. Okay, under that umbrella term, God the Supreme is the personalization of all universe experience. What proper designation is tied to that phrase? That's the Supreme Being. The personalization of all universe experience is the Supreme Being. The focalization of all finite evolution. Well, that one's pretty easy. That's the Universal Mother. Right? There's focalization. You got the keyword. Yeah. You can't miss it. You know which one that is. Okay? So it's the Supreme Being, then the Universal Mother. The maximation of all creature reality. Now this is just tying in. Remember, the Supreme type deity is creature, creator, unifying type deity. And that Supreme Being is the creator. And so they're bringing in the creature side. Okay, it's the maximized creature. The consummation of cosmic wisdom. Well, if we wanted to use the proper name for that, that'd be the Supreme Mind. Okay, and then that whole extended thing. Look, this is kind of the main reason why they're restating this. The embodiment, remember, the Almighty Supreme, right? It's like the embodiment, the body. You can think of that as the body of the Supreme Being. But now we can give it a full threefold actuality description. Okay? The embodiment of the harmonious beauties of the galaxies of time, the truth of cosmic mind meanings, and the goodness of supreme spirit values. Okay? The threefold body. They just couldn't resist. Hence, they put a large paragraph space. It's like, yeah, we're kind of moving past the deity, but let's restate that deity picture, you know, using this fuller language now that we have. You know, so that you can really think of, those things in that first picture, we had the Almighty Supreme sort of, imposing itself upon just the material things. But what they're saying, well, that's a little bit of a simplistic view, because initially, yeah, when we do things, meanings, and values, we have this kind of real simple matter, mind, spirit. But technically, there's more than material things. thingness is a bigger concept. You really have threefold thingness. And so it, that embodiment, the Almighty Supreme, is a threefold synthesis. Okay. So just, you know, they couldn't resist the opportunity to give you another way of talking about, you know. So, you know, if you say, well, if someone says, well, who's the Universal Mother? You say, well, one way you could talk about the Universal Mother, you could say the Universal Mother is the focalization of all finite evolution. You know, or the Supreme Being is the personalization of all universe experience. And then you see the last little part, and this is kind of key because they're going to pick up on that and they go into the next section here. Again, reminding us about the Paradise Trinity. And they're giving you, see, a little bit of this. They're wanting you to think a little bit more about this relationship between the Paradise Trinity and the Mother, and God the Mother. Okay, we know that the Paradise Trinity is about the roots of God the Mother. Just like the first center is about the roots of God the Father. Okay. And now that you have the full, it's kind of the non-personal thing picture in play, you go, oh yeah, after all, the Paradise Trinity is not a person. Okay, it's impersonal. So it's not surprising that when all is said and done, when all of this personal purposive action of God the Mother is done with giving rise to God the Supreme, that there's very fundamentally woven into that an impersonal component. Because the roots of this whole focalizing phenomenon were in the Paradise Trinity. That's what they're trying to get you to think about, how the two go hand in hand. That you basically, when you take God the Mother, you know, up from the finite to the absonite to the absolute, all the way up to the infinite, you know, when you go past the absolute, you go to this non-personal root. And you do the same thing with the Father. I mean, you know, if you take the God the Father all the way back to the root, you know, the first center is not a person. That's just the root. You know, that's just one side of the universal one of infinity. It's a facet of deity. It's not a person. But it's the root for, on the one side, for God the Father, and the root for God the Mother on the other side.
In the second paragraph, it starts out, mechanisms produced by higher minds function to liberate their creative sources. You know, I was thinking that maybe, you know, we experience mechanisms from higher minds, and, you know, and we impose those on our children and on our, you know, subjects in a country. You know, the mechanism of a supposedly higher rulers of a country, higher mind.
Right.
And so.
But we do that. We do that imposition for a purpose.
Right. Right.
It's not because we want to just impose upon others.
But it's an impersonal thing.
Yeah. And, right.
And
but
really,
it is impersonal.
As you go up the rings and you go up, you know, tighter. Yeah. We're discovering higher patterns, higher impersonal patterns is what we're doing.
Right.
But we're using personality to choose those steps. Those steps are already there. They're patterns ultimately coming from paradise.
Yeah.
But those steps are there, but we're choosing to go up those stairs or go down.
Yeah, and think, see, and now step back and rethink again what true government is. Yeah. See, true government is an impersonal expression of a group. It's a mechanism that you're going to impose, not because you want to, you know, subjugate yourself. That would be some arbitrary, you know, we're going to make it a true government. So there's going to be purpose behind it. This imposition that we're going to impose upon ourselves is for a higher purpose, primarily to liberate me as a person, so that I can truly function as a person and I don't have to be mechanism and person.
Yeah.
I don't have to be that impersonal and the person. Just like you separate the eternal sun from the Isle of Paradise. Okay? You're doing the same thing. A true government you know, is an impersonal expression for a purpose. It's a means to greater liberty, greater personal expression. And the extent to which a government, you know, it does the opposite to you, you know it's not true. It's an easy litmus test that you don't have true government. If it's preventing liberty. Now, of course, we're talking true liberty again. Okay, you know, there's all these goals. You know, everything's got to be true for this, you know, to be like this. But the pattern, the true pattern, is there on high, Isle of Paradise and the Eternal Sun. You know, you're trying to, you know, this is one way that you're expressing that down here. Okay, with God-conscious persons, God-conscious citizens, creating a true government, a form in which those liberated persons can function.
And when Adam and Eve first came, one of the problems it says they had in the book was the people were so primitive and confused that they had to be very careful about imposing a higher pattern. They had to keep it very simple.
Right.
You know, very basic. They really, and that was the frustration they experienced. They could conceive patterns. You know, but they had to constantly remind themselves, be patient.
Because true patterns must evolve in the super universes.
Yeah.
You know, we know that the word true is tied to the word cosmic. You know, the cosmos is an evolutionary phenomenon, you know. So, all right, we're just going to go into this next section just a little bit. It kind of nicely breaks into two chunks, and we need to break this final section into two chunks. So let's just delve a little bit into this, the part that sort of is immediately carrying forward from this section. You want to just keep reading, or I mean, we're just going to do a few more of these little paragraphs.
Okay,
like
two more.
Well, we'll see here. Would you like to give it up to in case you if you need to get going? You can.
That's all right.
Okay.
Functions of providence. Providence does not mean that God has decided all things for us and in advance. God loves us too much to do that, for that would be nothing short of cosmic tyranny. Man does have relative powers of choice. Neither is the divine love that short-sighted affection which would pamper and spoil the children of men. The Father, Son, and Spirit, as the Trinity, are not the Almighty Supreme. But the supremacy of the Almighty can never be manifest without them. The growth of the Almighty is centered on the absolutes of actuality and predicated on the absolutes of potentiality. But the functions of the Almighty Supreme are related to the functions of the Paradise Trinity.
Okay. You've got these italics going on, and they're obviously trying to leverage some more thoughts into play here. This first sentence is fun here. Notice how the very sentence is trying to evolve you from just the father-like picture into a bigger picture. You know, so look at the way they word it. You know, the Father, Son, and Spirit as a Trinity. Okay, well, initially, you know, that's your notion, is that, you know, you... the Father, Son, and Spirit functioning together is the Trinity. It's like, well, no, not quite. That's actually the first triunity. You know, once you you've got it firmly in your head that there's four things, okay, you can, it's like, well, let's just set that seven absolutes of infinity picture aside for the moment. And let's just take, you know, the raw form of this sentence. The Trinity is not the Almighty Supreme, but the supremacy of the Almighty can never be manifest without it. Okay? If you, they start you in the seven absolutes of infinity sort of a picture. Just you can go ahead and just keep moving, you know? They obviously want you to. You know, what they're trying to do is allow, you know, let us think in both directions around the infinite eternal ellipse, you know, in the father direction and the mother direction, if we're ready to do that. If you're not ready to do that, they constructed the sentence so that you you kind of can get the gist of it still, you know, in the more limited picture. Okay, so, you know, and that's where the function comes in. Remember, you know, and they're going to repeat it here, not in just a little bit. You know, we went back and, you know, in the Paradise Trinity paper, you know, to really discover this whole bit about the totality attitude, coordinate actor, cosmic overcontroller. Remember, those were those three functions. The Trinity doesn't really have attributes, it has functions. You know, that's how we got really our picture of God the Mother laid out. Well, see, they're tying right into it here. Okay, they're invoking that right here. That whole bit about, you know, the growth of the Almighty Supreme related to the three absolute potentials and three absolute actuals, but it's grown by, doesn't grow itself, it's grown by the functioning, you know, the Universal Mother. You know, we know how this whole picture can be talked about now. See, and so they're pointing out, okay, you know, we know that there's this difference between the Almighty Supreme and the Universal Mother. You know, the Trinity is not the Almighty Supreme. You know, or even a manifestation coming from the Trinity is not the Almighty Supreme. That's the Universal Mother. You know, it's not the Almighty Supreme. But, you know, we also know how this is all linked together. From the Trinity comes the Universal Mother, and the Universal Mother is focalizing the all, you know, the summation of the Almighty Supreme, and the Almighty Supreme is connected to the things. We know there's this full system in play. You know, so you have these functions. If you look at the Almighty Supreme, you know, it seems to have functions. It's like, well, that's because that which is the functions, the Universal Mother, is engaged to the Almighty Supreme. Okay? All right, so that's how they start you out, and then look at this next paragraph. They're going to build on that. Go ahead. Yeah.
It would appear that in the Supreme Being, all phases of universe activity are being partially reunited by the personality of the experiential deity. When, therefore, we desire to view the Trinity as one God, and if we limit this concept to the present known and organized grand universe, we discover that the evolving Supreme Being is the partial portraiture of the Paradise Trinity. And we further find that this Supreme Deity is evolving as the personality synthesis of finite matter, mind, and spirit in the grand universe.
Okay. Now, they couldn't get more direct here in some of these things they're saying. Take that first sentence up first. Notice how they word it. It would appear, parenthetically, in the Supreme Being, all phases of universe activity, etc. Okay. It doesn't say the Supreme Being is partially reuniting all phases. See, it doesn't say it that way. Okay? Again, it's this evolutional thing. It says parenthetically in the Supreme Being. Well, you know, you have the Supreme Being as an absolute fact, and we go down into the finite. It's like going inside the Supreme Being, you know, and looking at the parts that are down in the finite, the Almighty Supreme, the Universal Mother. Okay. And look at that next sentence. When, therefore, we desire to view the Trinity as one God, you should go, wait a minute. Okay. I've been thinking about the seven absolutes infinity, and I'm finally figuring out the Paradise Trinity, and I know from direct statements that the Paradise Trinity is non-personalizable deity. What on earth are they? You can't think of the Trinity as God. Yeah, you can think of the Trinity as a source of God, God the Mother. I mean, that's, you know, say it the way we now know how to say it. When, therefore, we desire, you know, to talk about God the Mother, and we limit this concept to the present known and organized grand universe, we discover that part of what that supreme being is down in the finite is tied to that paradise trinity. It's called the universal mother, with the attributes downstepped in partial of the trinity. You know, womb, vocalizer, upholder, totality attitude, coordinate actor, cosmic overcontroller. So the first, you know, we discover that, you know, in the supreme being, if you will, or down in the finite, there's two things: the universal mother, and we further find that this supreme deity is evolving as a personality synthesis of finite matter, mind, and spirit in the grand universe. And we call that facet of deity the Almighty. Okay, see, so they're just, again, you know, we've put this all together, so it's kind of a little bit anticlimactic. But see, if you think about, if you were still trying to put the whole God the Mother picture together, this is a pretty key point. They're actually saying, if you desire to view the Trinity as one God, that should make you stop. It's like, wait a minute, that's nonsensical. I don't get that. You got to put together that whole total deity picture and get God the Mother to really understand. See. All right. See. So here it is. They're just going to repeat that statement that's back from the Paradise Trinity paper. Go ahead and read that next one there, John.
The gods have attributes, but the Trinity has functions. And like the Trinity, providence is a function. The composite of the other than personal over control of the universe of universes, extending from the evolutionary levels of the sevenfold, synthesizing in the power of the Almighty on up through the transcendental realms of the ultimacy of deity.
Okay. Or take it back down the other way. You have God the Mother, you know, the downstepping expression, down into the finite, the personal purposive individuality, it's the universal mother. That's personal over control. Remember, over control is a mother word. Okay. Personal over control of the Almighty Supreme. So that over control gets imposed upon the Almighty Supreme, but now we're in other than personal. The Almighty Supreme is it. Okay? But it's engaging the things. Okay? And when you see that subtle coordinate action in the things, there's a word that humans have always used for that: providence. Okay? So that subtle, it seems like there's a hand, but there's no sign of a hand. But there's this vast conspiracy of matter, mind, and spirit all working together mysteriously. Is it mystical? No. It's providence. You can appropriately call it providence. But where does that providence come from? It doesn't come out of the things. It doesn't even come from the Almighty Supreme that has a grip on those things. It's giving that, you know, putting that conspiracy into it. It's coming from the mother, vocalizing, you know, coordinating the Almighty that's coordinating the things.
Could it be, as we perceive patterns on a higher, more spiritual, what we would call spiritual level,
mm-hmm.
tighter around that adjuster ring,
mm-hmm.
where at the same time, when we reflect back down, we're actually expanding our base
mm-hmm.
to recognize more fundamental, impersonal patterns of not only ourselves and our society, but the functioning of the universe.
And guess what? There's a sentence coming up that says exactly that. Yeah, you've got it. See, you know. See, once you see the picture, you know what it's going to say next because it's logical. You know it. Okay? That's what we're trying to get at. To be able to to know exactly what the book has to say next.
That's the spirit.
You've got the logical picture in your head then. That's when you know that you're tuning in and that the book wasn't written by Bob. Okay? Man. Yeah.
Yeah. Curious, I looked up the word providence. Mm-hmm. It says the quality or state of being provident. And the next word is provident, making provisions for the future. Mm-hmm. Provident, frugal.
Now, this is providence with a capital P. Okay? This is that other name for God.
Well, it also says divine guidance.
Right. It's this, you know, it's the name given for God in the things. And we've just figured out how God gets into the things. Okay? It's not magical. It isn't God just waving a magic wand and making, you know, things do a vast conspiracy that's beneficial. Okay? It's through this full understanding of God the Supreme that you can finally get this all understood, how this works. How purposiveness gets down to things. You know, things aren't self-purposing. The conspiracy is not in them. Okay? You know, or to do, you know, how did they word that? Remember, to accept the fallacy of omnificence is to embrace the colossal error of pantheism. Okay? Capital P. Right, capital P. You know, just like a capital P providence. Okay? Yeah.
I remember in the beginning of the book on the Father, it said, you know, kind of makes the point, he's not an indulgent. That's what I was thinking of, the word I was coming to mind, indulgent, when you were talking about, you know, just being unorganized and, well, whatever his emotional whim is. It's more, you know, like human. But, you know, he's regular. I mean, that was the first thing, you know. He was regular and he abided by laws, you know, so to speak. He abided by regularity of function, of action.
Mechanisms.
Yeah.
Yep. All right.
God loves each creature as a child, and that love overshadows each creature throughout all time and eternity. Providence functions with regard to the total and deals with the function of any creature as such function is related to the total. Providential intervention with regard to any being is indicative of the importance of the function of that being, as concerns the evolutionary growth of some total. Such total may be the total race, the total nation, the total planet, or even a higher total. Excuse me. It is the importance of the function of the creature that occasions providential intervention, not the importance of the creature as a person.
Okay. See, you cannot get to that without God the Mother. Okay. And you see how you kept going, because the paragraph is dripping with God the Mother, okay? they italicized the word function again. Just, you know, have we italicized it enough yet? And, you know, and if you notice that this is basically a repeat of the sentence back in the Paradise Trinity paper, and did you notice how many times we use the word whole? This distinction is vital. We're in a cosmic system. The individual members are not connected with each other except in relation to the whole and through the individuality of the whole, the Mother, okay? Yeah. You know, and so when you go to think about providence, you're talking about God the Mother. You're not talking about God the Father. And that's why people have had such goofed up notions about providence. Providence is not an expression of God the Father. Providence is an expression of God the Mother. See? And therefore, it is the importance of the function, function is the key, of the creature that occasions providential intervention, not the importance of the creature as a person. It's not about you as a person. It's not a father-like intervention. It's a mother-like intervention, which means it's fundamentally the whole, not the individual. Father relates to the individual. Mother relates to the whole. See, so finally, once you have God the Mother, you can understand providence, okay? And look at what, you know, but it's like, well, so there's no no need for me to even think about God the Father anymore then. And you're telling me, no, what's the next paragraph?
Nevertheless, the Father as a person may at any time interpose a fatherly hand in the stream of cosmic events, all in accordance with the will of God and in consonance with the wisdom of God and is motivated by the love of God.
You still have that, okay? But it's not just, you know, everything has to somehow be, okay, and then God the Father zips over here and he does that, and then he zips over here and he does that. And he's not this micromanager. He doesn't have to micromanage, because guess what? He's not alone. It's not just the Father. There's also the Mother. There's no need for micromanagement because there's an individuality of the whole. It doesn't need to be micromanaged. It's fundamentally connected through the individuality of the whole. Okay? He doesn't have to, you know, create this vast micromanaged conspiracy. There is providence, but it's just a fundamental aspect of the Mother. Okay? Yeah. Just one more paragraph we're going to do. It indicates, it points to, it's you know, flashing neon arrow.
Indicative.
Look here, indicative, yeah. It indicates, yeah. Yeah. All right.
But yet this paragraph is saying that if the Father has the desire or the need or the love to do so, he can interject
and,
in cosmic events.
Right, and if he does that, what does it look like? There's something that's at that location that indicates that he's doing that. What's that something called? A personalized adjuster. That's how he does that. A personalized adjuster is how he makes that paragraph happen. Okay, not magically. So when you're reading the Jesus papers and they mention that there's a personalized adjuster, or you're reading about the Most High Regent and there's a personalized adjuster, that's this paragraph. It's not just all Mother. Father is directly intervening in the events there. He does it through the personalized adjuster. That's, you know, he can't do it magically. He has to literally do it. That personalized adjuster is literally his finger poked into, you know, events. All right, then let's just sum it up here.
Water turned into wine.
Well, no, that didn't take a personalized adjuster. That just took some really speedy midwayers, master physical controllers.
Okay, but what man calls providence is all too often the product of his own imagination, the fortuitous juxtaposition of the circumstances of chance. There is, however, a real and emerging providence in the finite realm of universe existence, a true and actualizing correlation of the energies of space, the motions of time, the thoughts of intellect, the ideals of character, the desires of spiritual natures, and the purposive volitional acts of evolving personalities. Whew. The circumference of the
circumstances
of the material realms find final finite integration in the interlocking presences of the supreme and the ultimate.
Okay, we're going to stop there for tonight. But this is, you know, it's just a really cool paragraph here in that list. We're talking about things, the fullness of things. You know, we brought in matter, mind, and spirit, but now they're bringing in, look at all the other things they're bringing in. You have energies, motions, thoughts, ideals, desires, and purposive volitional acts. The full spectrum of things are all being brought together, you know, in this vast conspiracy called providence. The hand of the individuality, the whole expressed in things, all things, from volitional acts on one end to energies on the other end. Okay.
That's the whole thing, Les.
Right.
So that sounds like more than the personalized adjuster.
That's the whole thing.
Right. That's you know, in relation to the whole. When we say whole in that sentence, think of this list, the whole. I mean, really, the whole. Everything you can think of. Okay. And it's all being brought together through the mother. And then just one little technicality to point out, because it ties into the very first sentence we read tonight. This is why this is a great spot to start, but it brings us back around full circle. Energies of space. Okay. I've tried to point out, when they use the word energy, fundamentally something is called an energy, and not a force, say, if it's a differential. Space-like, see, differential. Okay? Energies of space. Energies of the differential. See?
Yeah.
And the motions of time. Time is the chronicity of motion.
What paragraph are you referring to?
Just that, the very last thing you read there, that whole list.
Oh, okay.
You know, the first two things in that list, just to notice how craftily they constructed those two. You know, so to get you to think again, this whole bit about time and space in the title of this paragraph, they're trying, you know, we had time and space, hunger and fear. That was a really cool thing.
Yeah, cool.
Okay, now like I see energies and motion. See, they're trying to get you to see this in a more holistic fashion, how all these things are tied together. So that's just a really nice little turn of a couple phrases
there. How they apply to the material man, too.
Yeah.
Down to it.
Right.
You can get some relationships going, and you can get some order to the relationships.
You know how to pre-think inventions,
and
then experiment to get to tweak it.
And just that, and also hearkening back that whole buffer, you know, insulation between. You know, again, you know, this differential is obviously different than unity. And where's the infinite? You know, and it's in that first functional level, total deity. The static level. The word static doesn't sound like motion. See, you're different, okay, than that. You've been, you know, again, just to see this very literally, how time and space allow you to be exist. At the same time, the infinite exists because you're not like it, so you don't get absorbed back into it. You're not stasis, you're motion.
Right. Okay. Let me tell you with the clue, like nothing but change, nothing but motion.
Mm-hmm. All right. So so then from this point on, you know, it's a little bit more personal about you and Providence. And we'll finish this paper up then next time, but just see how, you know, now that we have, you know, I hope everyone can see that now that we really have, you know, the ability to talk about God, you know, as both mother and father, how we can just understand so clearly what they're saying here, you know, it's just very immediate. That's why I got so excited when I finally figured that out and I was writing that total EP. It's like, oh, this is what I knew it was what, you know, we needed. You know, I had no idea how all the places you could start applying it,
right.
You know, but I knew that was the key that would unlock. Yeah, and you can see how it does. It just unlocks the full meaning.
Yeah.
All right, so let's take a moment to reflect on that.